And coming up next, it's the 11-3, that's November 3rd edition of Bathrobes, Pierres, Broadsides. Going to have interviews with Keith McHenry, folks at the Benchlands, before it was completely dumped, swept, and trashified. And a few other goodies, plus we have an interview with Aaron Mate's university guest on the Ukraine. He'll be identifying himself and talking towards the end of this show. A lot of this I'm putting on for two reasons. One, I think it's an important issue. And second, on Thursdays, I'm finding I have less and less time to do this show. So hopefully I'm putting in something that's worth your hearing. And you can let me know what you think of that. But let's get on with it.
I'm tired of moon songs, of star and of June songs. They simply make me nap. And ditties romantic drive me nearly frantic. I think they're all full of pap. History's making, nations are quaking. Why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Sing me a song with social significance. All other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't love you.
Okay, well, it's the 27th of October. It's about, 20 to 2, I'm talking with
Barefoot Brad.
And Barefoot Brad, the last time we talked was God knows when, but do you remember where we met?
I believe we met right here.
At the town clock.
I believe so, yes.
Was One Ton Dave around?
One Ton Dave was here, and Shoeless Joe, Joe Biff's, what was Joe's nickname?
I forget. Jetlag Joe.
Jetlag Joe, yeah, and also the guy with glasses.
Red Top Robert.
Red Top Robert, oh, I love Red Top Robert, he was so cool. Yeah, those guys were all here. One Ton Jacob. That was during the Iranian. That was during the
Persian Gulf War.
Persian Gulf, 1981. I don't know when it was.
1990, 91.
Yeah, some way the heck back when.
And why were you here? What was that about? If you remember.
Well, we just did a sit-in here at the town clock. We all got tickets, and I ended up having to do community service at the high school for a week for mine. I had to be a janitor there. That was kind of fun. I got so many tickets, I couldn't believe I earned a week of community service, but yeah.
How did the police treat you?
They're all right. Sometimes they're nimnos, you know. Corbis and Winston used to give me a lot of shit, especially Officer Winston. He was kind of a dick, but they were all right.
And actually, this sit-in or sleep-out that Barefoot Brad mentioned, I think it was mentioned because he... I didn't wear shoes. There was another fellow called Shoeless Joe. These were activists who originally were protesting the Iraqi war, who, after the police became relatively violent and abusive, stealing their property, stealing their survival gear, they decided to stay on and continued their protests for several months at the town clock. This was before it was a so-called park. It was turned into a park, actually, as a part of the attempt to get rid of the protesters rather than address the real issues that they were concerned about, police violence against the homeless. The original protest about the war and the Persian Gulf, Bush's war, the elder Bush, as I said, had sort of transmogrified into something else based on how the police were treating peaceful homeless protesters. And some homeless people who joined them in order to be protected at night, although they ended up being targeted more than protected.
The in and out. You know, getting a ticket's better than going to jail and then having to deal with it that way. So you get a ticket, you go to court, they give you community service. You pay the, what, $25 or whatever it was back then. And they send you to community service. So I did a week at the Santa Cruz High School, and I had to do a couple days at the Salvation Army afterwards. And that was it. That was my perdition for standing against the town clock in a massive protest.
What was the issue that you were at the town clock for?
I believe we were protesting Reagan's involvement in the sunken Iranian war or something. I forget what it was.
That'd be Bush's involvement.
Bush's involvement, yeah.
The older Bush.
Mm-hmm. CIA and shit like that.
Now, was the sleeping ban in Santa Cruz involved at all?
Yeah, we were getting tickets because we were here at the town clock and we weren't supposed to be spending the night here. And even across the street at Scribner's Park, we were getting tickets for sleeping. I think that's where they were generating all the tickets from, was a sleeping ban. It's not as bad anymore. You can actually see people sleeping on the sidewalks now, so they've won a little bit of a victory from it.
Or else people have gotten so desperate they're just spilling out there. You mentioned you had gotten housing and you recently lost it.
Yeah, I got evicted. I had a real dick for a neighbor, and I think he called the cops on me a couple times, but he was Aryan Nation, so I didn't give a fuck. He's a real prick. And that might have led to me getting evicted, but I think my landlord just wanted somebody that had a car and was a breadwinner. So she evicted me after 8 years. It was fun while it lasted.
How does it differ from now? You mentioned there are more people on the streets. You say there's more leniency, seemingly, or maybe they're just don't have the manpower to, you know, go after everybody.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not afraid when I camp. I'm not afraid that I'm going to get a ticket now. I think it's non-existent, which is good. So somehow or other, the sleeping thing is passed into moral, Betty Bye or whatever. We don't see very often. We don't see too much of a...
They put the sleeping ban to bed, did they?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, how do you see it? You're still active with it. What do you think?
Well, they just demolished most of the Benchlands campground, as you probably know. And I'm afraid that... And they have some people, they have these excuses, or you might say these actual so-called alternatives for people to go to into programs like the Armory... The Overlook, it's called, and then there's 1220 River, and then there's the Pallets out at 115 Coral Street.
No, where are people staying when they're still outdoors? Do you know of any camping areas where people are still camping in groups anywhere around here at all?
It's still illegal everywhere in Santa Cruz to do that, but people are doing it anyway because they have to. I mean,
no alternative, just like everywhere else in California. Where else can you go? You know, I heard that they made camping illegal in downtown Portland the other day. That's what I heard.
I think I read something about that. Not entirely sure. But I know that what they want to do is force you to sign up for a program, use the court system to either you have to classify yourself as disabled, mentally ill, a drug abuser, antisocial, I don't know, whatever kind of, you know, label.
I like the term transient. That was always my favorite. I'm transient.
Undesirable transient element.
Okay, I'll go with that one. I'll deal with that, yeah.
You're a youth, man.
I'm still youthful, yeah, but I'm not a youth anymore.
Not a youth, but a youth, U-G-E. Undesirable transient element.
Oh, a youth, yeah. Hey, I'm
an
Indian.
That's what they call people in the 70s here.
Undesirable transient entity?
Element,
okay, good. I'm a youth.
But you weren't that transient. You're here. You've been here for years.
I had a mattress and a box spring, and I wanted to give it to the homeless after they cleared the benchlands, but I had to know where they might be setting up a camp someplace outdoors, and I would drive it there. But I couldn't find out from anybody. I asked, and nobody seemed to know, so we made a dump run, and I took it to the dump, because now... When I was working for Furniture for Families, it cost money to go to the dump with your mattresses. Now you can take them for free. So we actually made a dump run, tossed some stuff, and actually the mattress was free to dump and didn't have to pay for it. So I was stoked on that. So that was about beginning of the month, I think.
Now, you're outside now.
Oh, yeah. I'm back where I used to be in Aptos most of the time, and also up on the hill every now and then, up on...
Sheriffs aren't hassling you.
No. You know, they never did Aptos. Once I was camping there years and years ago, and I was sleeping in the clover leaf, and it was like wooded and everything. There was a lot of wooded area there. I go at night and I'd chop off things that would get in my way, so I had a good path in the dark to camp. And I was there sleeping near the hedge and near a big plant and everything. He couldn't see me. And all of a sudden, there's this flashlight in my eye at 1:30 in the morning. And I go, oh, fuck, it's got to be a cop or something. And the guy takes one look at me and he shouts over to the other guy over by the bridge next to Highway 1. Oh, this isn't him. This is just some transit guy sleeping. Never mind. And they took off. And
How long ago?
Oh, that was before I got housed. So that was back in early 2000 sometimes, 2006 maybe. It's kind of funny. So I was there forever and ever and ever. And one time, I'd get stopped on the bench in the morning and a cop go, what, the reason I stopped you, look like somebody that something's happening in Cabrillo. We thought it might be you. Where'd you spend the night last night? And I didn't know what to say. And were you camping? That's okay. And then he passed it up and I thought, oh, good. They don't mind you camping down there. So every now and then, you know, people would sleep in the parking lot at the Resurrection Church across the way. And I'd see homeless people every now and then there now. So I'm still in the same general area. I'm just on the other side of the street. I was in the cloverleaf and they cleared it all up. So I'm on the other side in the wilderness where the trees are still. Same place I always was for years and years and years and years and years.
Were you around when Camp Paradise 20 years ago was doing its thing with Larry Templeton? And I don't know if you remember that. It was right along Highway 1.
That area over there, past the shopping center, right at Highway 1.
That would be Ross Camp. Yeah, but it was. It's kind of, it's over on the other side of the highway.
By Denny's. You mean over on the Denny's side?
Yeah.
I think I remember hearing about that. Yeah, I was never over there, but I remember hearing about it. Yeah.
In 2001, there was a campground there. Speaking of which, here come our friends, the Santa Cruz Police. So.
Yeah, you go on that side, you walk on that side, and then you walk along the freeway in the ditch, right? That area. On this side of the...
You walk to the end of Felker Street. You know, Denny's, and you walk all the way to the end where Dead Ends and the river.
Yeah.
Then you walk down under the freeway, and if you kept walking, that was Camp Paradise.
You mean under the freeway?
Under the freeway and beyond under the freeway.
Towards where the red barn places are, that area.
Across from the cemetery and across from the tannery, if you know where the tannery is.
Yeah, the tannery is where all the red house and the red barn places are and shit, right there, right?
I don't know what color they are.
Okay,
but,
well, you go under Highway 1 and that extended...
Yes.
That, I've seen, yeah, I remember guys. There was some of the guys who were sub rows of that tore up the mall that time. Some of the guys stayed there that were with that. You remember that they all wore masks and they tore up the mall?
I remember there was a thing in 2010. There was an incident here.
Yeah, they broke a bunch of windows. That was it.
Yeah.
That was it. Yeah, those guys stayed in those trees past the freeway. That
you usually camp alone or in company?
I camp alone, yeah. I always have.
With an animal, with a companion of any kind?
No, just... my psychic self.
You're a psychic self, yeah.
No, I'm kidding. Yeah, I don't know. If I had a dog or something, I would camp with a dog, but I don't. Because I get on the bus in the morning. When I first started going there in the 90s, I felt guilty. I thought, fuck, I've got a free camp. And I take the bus every morning, so I walked to camp for a whole month, 8 miles out and 8 miles in. And I walked the whole month down to I had a duffel bag then. I remember carrying a duffel bag, not a backpack. So I two-strap double
gonna
bag.
Punish yourself.
Oh, I did for a month just to make sure I earned. I don't know how long I was going to have to be staying there. Obviously, quite a long time. So I thought I'll pay for it first off, and that'll endear me to whatever psychic thing they're saying. You're a lazy bum. Oh, you're not too lazy. You walked, you know. Whatever it was, there's always an extra that you can smooth over. So I did.
Yeah.
And I walked the whole way downtown, 8 miles downtown, back to camp every night for a month, and that was it. After that, I said, fuck it, I ruined it. I'm going to take the bus for the rest of my life down to the... So I take the bus at 11 at night with all the Mexican guys coming from the restaurants and stuff. We'd all hang out in the bus, and they'd go to Watsonville, and I'd go to Aptos. And then that was back then, before I got... Then I went back down to Laguna Beach, and I got called up with my Section 8 came through. And I had to come up in, like, the end of 2011, beginning of 2012, and start signing up for Section 8. And it took till the end of 2013 for that to come through, and then I got a place.
And you've been there for 8 years, and then...
Till August, yeah. I got out August 8th. I'm getting evicted. So I'm still in... I have to go see a lawyer to try to get my deposit back from him if I can. And I'm still trying to find another place to live.
You have a phone?
Yep.
If you want, give me your number, and I may get in touch with you to get updates if you feel like it.
Okay. All right, we'll do that.
Anything you want to add before I well, sign off.
I think maybe if it has something to do with all the drugs that are around, I like the fact that they've lightened up on marijuana and they're legalizing it. I know Joe Biden just let a lot of people out of prison for marijuana offenses about a week ago also.
Actually, what he did was he declared he would strike their records, but nobody got out of prison.
Oh, but they got their records struck.
That's it. I mean, in other words, there are plenty of people in jail in the federal government for other crimes, some of them hard drugs, some of them selling marijuana. Nobody got out for that. But he wanted to do something. This is my analysis. Yeah. He wanted to do his thing for the election because he wants to keep a Democratic majority in the House of Representatives.
A little late for that.
Yeah, it's
a little late for that. It's a little...
He's so unprofessional. One time when he was running for president in this last election, his advertisement went like this. He goes, "Hi, this is Joe." And then he carried on from there, and I go, "What?
He's a regular Joe."
He's a regular joke off, is what he is. You can't do that. You have to say, "This is Joe Biden. I'm running for president." You have to do that. It's part of the
rap.
Parliamentary crap that you have to go through. You couldn't do that. You could get away with that in high school, and still they'd complain about it. If you said, "Hi, I'm Bill. You know me. Y'all know me. I'm senior class president, and I'm running for fucking this and that treasurer." Whatever. You know what I mean? The fact that he used his first name shows his lack of... It's like walking on stage with pajamas on. No tuxedo, no tie. Probably hadn't even brushed his teeth. He hasn't wiped his butt. He probably has toilet paper drilling from his rear end. And he's pulling a Joe Biden like he always does.
I don't mind his doing that. What I mind is the people he's fronting for is what bothers me. I mean, it's, you know, this wealth situation gets worse and worse. Poorer, more and more poor people. And it's...
But he just told the Saudis off last week. And he go, hey, we're a nation of martyrdom and jihad. We don't like being threatened. This is Joe Biden. Fuck, he put his foot in his mouth in front of those guys.
He hasn't stopped arming them, so they're going after Yemen still.
Yeah, but he was really rude to them in public about the oil and everything like that. You got to give those guys credit. They're clean. They're like Ringo's. They're like Ringo's grandfather. They're clean.
They're clean old man.
They're clean old man. Yeah. Well, he's clean old man.
Brad, let me. You don't mind if I put this on the net to let people know that you're still alive and cranky.
Yeah, please tell us.
Cranky. You're not cranky at all, actually. And you're not even barefoot anymore. Times have changed, Brad.
You know what? I had glass in my feet, and the whole time I was barefoot. And in when was it? 94. I got the first piece out of my heel. He took it out there. I heard a Billy Joel lyric as soon as it came out of my foot. I heard a Billy Joel lyric. He was probably glad that the glass was out of there. For some reason, we're probably standing in the thing, and this piece of glass, I don't know why I heard, but I heard a Billy Joel lyric as soon as he pulled the glass out of my heel. And then about a year later, I got the one in this foot out. I had a little sliver and a ball in my foot.
And you've been walking around all these years with glass on your feet?
I had for about 12 years, from about 82 to 94, yeah.
Was it very painful for you?
One of my right foot was hella painful, man. It was like, it was a big chunk, and it was in my right heel, and so I'd step on it, and yank! And when I'd be barefoot, I'd hit something down there, like a rock, and I'd step right on it, and I'd, it would hurt really bad, because I'd land right on the sore spot. And then I was sleeping in Laguna Beach, and it started throbbing at 4 in the morning, really throbbing in pain, like I'd wake up, and I was scared I was going to die. Nobody would remove it. I went to doctors, though. We don't want to do it.
How did you finally get it out?
I had the skin doctor. I had these, I had moles, you know.
Hey, have some food, man. I'm not going to finish this.
Oh, dude, are you kidding me? I'm lucky I finished what I finished. I ate a lot of big potatoes. I had mole right here, and I had biopsies right here, and I was going to the skin doctor right next to St. Jude and Fullerton. St. Jude Hospital, there's one right off, you know, just Dumb Short Irving's, you know, a laser dermatology center right next to St. Jude. So I went there one day and I go, "Hey, your needles don't hurt." You know, he puts a needle on it before he cuts it out and you never feel it. And I go, "Would you go ahead and, that thing right there is a piece of glass, would you do me the honors and take that out for
me?" And he did.
And he was so cool. And he did, and he took it out, and I'll be damned. He said, "Just say it's a bone spur, we're good." You know, because he had to write it in his report or something like that for Medicare to cover it. And so I went back to Laguna Beach, and my foot was better.
I'm going to leave it there because I got someone waiting. But again, we've been talking with
Barefoot Brad once again. Good to see you again, Robert.
Time was when a man could live alone. Man was free to roam over land that wasn't known. Peaceful years would flow, he could watch his children grow. But it was a long time ago. Time was when a man could have his land. He could farm it with his hands, he was free to make a stand. He could live a life of toil with his future in the soil. But it was a long time ago. Time was when troubles were few, when there weren't so many people to tell you what to do. Time was when a man could have his pride, when time was on his side and there was no need to hide. The world was far away, there was truth in every day. But it was a long time ago. Time was when troubles were few, when there weren't so many people to tell you what to do. Time was when a man could have his pride, when time was on his side and there was no need to hide. The world was far away, there was truth in every day. But it was a long time ago. It was a long time ago.
And that was Time Was by Phil Oakes from the album On My Way, which is a kind of a combination of his demos. So now it's time to go to the last days of the San Lorenzo survival encampment in the Benchlands, the Phase 8 demolition, which happened on the 1st of November. Again, I remind you, without adequate shelter, even for the people who they were evicting, most of the people, they claimed that there was a very limited number of people that were being evicted. I think the numbers were far undercounted. So if you want to take it from Larry Imwali, who calls himself, I guess the city also calls him this, Santa Cruz's homelessness response manager, he cites, well, this is Jessica York's article in the Sentinel Online, which appeared, I guess, yesterday, maybe, and it's in today's edition. He says that 135 people, quote, well, he says specifically, we have the people who are up at the armory right now, the 135 people that are now in better shelter conditions, and it's sort of one step toward more stable permanent housing. This, of course, is both misleading and false, in my view. It's, at least in part, both of those things. It's misleading because it talks about the 135 people now in better shelter conditions, which is true, probably, in some respects, than in the Benchlands, where the city intentionally, or through neglect, made it a miserable place to be and then started shoveling people in at a huge rate, claiming it was a sanctioned campground, so it was their excuse to start removing people from all the other campgrounds throughout the city, concentrating them there, and then crushing people, crunching people, putting them in a vice, in essence, as they continue to shut down phase after phase of the Benchlands, giving them no alternatives to leave except for the armory and the overlook outdoor encampment, which, of course, is a violation of the court's Martin versus Boise ruling. But more important, perhaps, to folks who are used to living outdoors, it was a very confined area, distant from community resources, community meeting places, heavily controlled, behind fences, not allowing visitors, requiring you to sign in and sign out, having curfews and so forth. And so in a way, Imwali set up a situation, or perhaps through the dictates of his boss, Matt Heffaker, a situation that he knew people would be rejecting. And in rejecting it, they would allow there to be some vacancies so that he could claim that there was always options if only people wanted to accept what some called prison-like conditions. Now, of course, what folks in the Benchlands and the community needed to do was to get together as they had done 2 years before, when a similar move by former city manager Martin Bernal and his police chief Andy Mills had moved on the encampment that was sitting around the Duck Pond and the upper area of the San Lorenzo Park, as well as the Benchlands. And the community came together, and as well as the Union of the Homeless, and they got a temporary restraining order, as well as actually standing off the police by being there physically. That didn't happen this year, perhaps because the city adopted a canny, sly strategy of slicing off the Benchlands one segment by one segment and allowing people this escape hatch of going into the other areas that are as yet untaken. But of course, every one of the areas got eventually demolished. And that's what happened on this day to the 8th area. I don't have a lot of audio, but I have some. I'm going to play it now. So it's a... I guess a light rain happening here at the Phase 8 demolition. I'm on the path right above the last remains of the Benchlands. I'm counting 10, 15, 20, 25. I'd say maybe 40 or 50 people, both in the campground coming up, removing small pieces of property, guitars, with stuff being left along the path here, presumably in transit to somewhere else. And what Jessica York's story that I was quoting Imwale from says is that there were 24 people still living in the San Lorenzo Park Benchlands in the week leading into the morning's final closure, and that only 10 people were moved into the managed city overlook encampment in De La Vega Park. There was at least 3 or 4 times that number of people that I saw there. Well, no, 2 or 3 times that number. And the second part of the claim that there was this great help, that essentially people got into the armory as a path toward more stable, permanent housing, it simply generally isn't true that the people get put into these shelters find permanent housing. They just don't, generally. Mainly because the housing doesn't exist, and it's simply a notion that in the future it will exist. And also, we want to have a place to put people so we can drive them out of public places and reassure the nervous residents who don't somehow think all homeless people are threats to their safety and that of their children, when there's been no such evidence that this really is true. But anyway, here's more of what I heard and saw. There are 2 SCPD vehicles. There's a smiling Carter Jones over there. Hi. And Carter Jones, in case I don't mention it, is sort of the go-to guy who is leading this destruction of hundreds of people's homes, survival gear, and property, and doing so with a grin on his face and a song in his heart, it seems like, occasionally helping people to carry stuff out, but mostly keeping them out when they try to come back and carry off more stuff, saying, oh, you had a week to take it all away. But, of course, the only place they could legally take it was, and they couldn't take much of it, would be up to the armory under the conditions mentioned before that were unacceptable to the majority of people there.
Jones, go somewhere else.
Jones.
Where are you going?
Right there.
Where are you going? You're making a democracy
of this. Not really.
That's always good.
Yeah, I think so. And actually, Jessica York begins her article by describing this as a buzz with activity. Actually, it was a frantic, chaotic scene where people were desperately trying to haul out property before it was taken and destroyed and thrust into a dumpster by police. And there isn't any real indication of that in this story. That's one of the reasons I get so pissed with Jessica's writing, because she's a scribe for the establishment, which I shouldn't find any surprise or shock at discovering.
So it's now about 5 to 9. We're hearing the police car say 15 minutes, and that was 10 minutes ago, or that's what I gather. And I'm talking with
Sea Otter.
Sea Otter, you're here with Laura to kind of witness what's going on. The disgraceful demolition of the survival encampment. And you're also going to be, you're one of the speakers, or you're just one of the originator of the free guide?
A co-author along with Merity Wells of Mariposa. We both came up with the free guide about 10 years ago to help people navigate free stuff in Santa Cruz.
Which I've seen, and actually it was one of the few real free guides. How does that compare with Morrison's free guide, or are you working with him now?
Morrison's free guide leaves out a lot of information.
And does it give a lot of false hopes, is my question.
Yes, it does.
How so?
There's changes that they don't know about, like the situation at St. Francis Catholic Kitchen.
What should they know about that they don't know?
They don't have food not bombs listed. And Janus is not a free program.
What is the requirement to get into Janus?
You have to have income.
What kind of income?
More than $500 a month.
Now, Janus, as you may know, if you're an old-timer here, is a drug treatment program.
To participate in
How long will that get you in for?
A month. A month at a time. Yeah.
$500 a month.
It's another program that only the rich can afford. You know,
relatively rich anyway.
Yeah, a person on the street won't be able to afford Janus, even after a court order.
So what do the people do when they get a court order?
Skip it.
So, if they're court ordered into a program, do they go back to jail? Do they hide out?
Usually for not following the court order.
Even though if the court knows they have no money?
Yeah. It's a corrupt system. Yeah.
I knew that, I think, somewhere along the line.
Yeah.
Well, I see the cops and the sheriffs are putting up.
Why is the sheriff?
I don't know. I'm assuming they're backup or something in case people decide to say fuck off and go away, which, of course, would be nice if people got together to do it if they wanted to, but would I risk all my property and my freedom? I don't know. You know, good question. There's been a slight lessening in the number of tents here, but most of the tents are still up, and I don't know. Are you a good judge, Sea Otter, of how usable a tent is? I mean, if they had time to remove these tents in an orderly way, they'll claim. Of course, the police will claim that they have given them a week.
But a lot of the easy up and large tents are made out of polyester, and polyester will not hold up in direct sunlight for very long. The particles in the material start disintegrating because they don't have any UV protection in clothing. So the polyester tents tend to start ripping out after 6 months of use.
But if these have been used only for a short period of time, they could still be salvaged for a while.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I'm just thinking, if the police actually gave these folks time, instead of destroying this property, which is what they did to all the other left behind or property that was remaining when they forced everybody out, it could be used, right?
Yeah. Exactly. It could be reused, yeah.
Now, are you and Laura here to video what's going on, too? Or?
Yeah, the problem is we can't take pictures of video with anybody in it.
Why not?
Courts don't like...
Screw the courts. Show the public. The courts are never going to see this shit anyway, probably. I mean, Laura's got a fixation on the courts, I'm afraid, in my view. But you know, I'd like to see that happen. But, yeah, I mean, I'd say take video as much as you can if she's up for it. I mean, I don't have video.
I'm taking certain still shots.
Right. I mean, you want to have the public see what's being destroyed. And the kind of misery that's being imposed by this crew of... police officers.
Police?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know
breaking
if they're lawful or
felonies.
Unlawful, but
they're
certainly... Well, they're unconstitutional, that's for damn sure.
And
people are...
Rights. You know, the city should lose their city charter on this and have something like Watsonville as the county seat and no longer Santa Cruz.
I don't know if that would make much difference. I don't know how Watsonville treats homeless people. Have you got any idea?
Watsonville is a little better than Santa Cruz in treating the homeless.
Get put on the list. Get put on the list. Because I never know anything to see here. You just schedule a sign.
Woman is walking around looking for Jeremy to get signed up. Yeah. Yeah, Jeremy will show up probably in an hour or something. And we're talking about, in case I don't mention it, Jeremy Leonard, who's the paid city guy who is supposed to be hooking people up with a so-called pathway to housing or emergency shelter or other alternatives to the what to do when the bulldozer comes for you.
Have you talked to Jeremy? Or?
No, I don't know who he is.
He's a tall guy with blonde hair who isn't here yet, as far as I can see.
When does he show up?
Who knows? Last time he showed up an hour late, so I don't know.
Hello.
It's 10 after 9. No police warnings yet, which is good. Some of the tents are collapsed, carried away, but I'm still counting 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 15, 20 or 25 tents still here. Hey man, how's it going?
Okay, better for me than you folks.
That's for damn sure. And the Sentinel is here with the photographer taking pictures. Morning again. And again, both sides of the trail are filling up with possessions that people are salvaging in anticipation of a police blockade of the area. Including solar panels, couches, chairs, buckets of goods, trailers, dogs, you name it. About 9:15 or so, a little earlier, it looks like the police are moving from their vehicles, which are parked on the grass between the duck pond and the children's playground. Hey there, you poot. Hello, you doggy. And they're moving into the benchlands and putting on their gloves. My goodness, watch out. Some folks still have Halloween masks or costumes on, very few, of course. And the bulldozer is starting to crunch property at the very end of the encampment. There's yellow tape up. You can hear the beeping of the bulldozer.
Carter Jones, the demolition boss of the police department, is down there supervising or walking around in an authoritative manner. Some of his underlings are there as well. The rain is beginning again. It's kind of been on and off, but it has been pretty constant for the last half hour. Now it seems to be a little heavier. Some folks have umbrellas. I don't, but here, no problem. Folks are coming through and apologizing for trying to get through a crowded pathway. Oh, you got to take your stuff out, right? You're busy.
No, I need one. I have everything.
What's your name, and if you want to say?
Miguel Portillo.
Miguel, I think we may have talked before. I don't know.
What you say?
Have we spoken before?
Yeah, we've spoken before.
How has the last week been for you?
What do you say?
How has the last week here in the camp been?
Everything is terrible, you know, because we have to move it, you know, and I don't know what they're doing with the money I give you for the city. Suppose they give you $21 million for the homeless peoples, and they went out doing expense and business for the other peoples, but they don't use money for the homeless peoples. The most people, they don't know, but I know about this one, you know.
Right.
This is only game for them, you know, because they make money for that one, you know. The city, you know, is only, I have to tell you, is big business for the city. You know, why they move people somewhere, after that they go put tickets for the people, more money, they want more money and more money, you know.
Stupid shit, in other words. Because people can't pay those tickets anyway.
Excuse me?
They cannot pay the tickets. No puede pagar. Ellos no pueden pagar the tickets. No tengo, ellos no tienen dinero, ¿verdad?
Yeah. If we don't have money, we can pay the tickets, but this is what they doing. Give you tickets. I got a ticket for camping, you know. I got a ticket, you know. I don't know. They discount my social security because, you know, I receive my social security.
Where are you going to go now, do you know?
Huh?
Where do you intend to go with your stuff if you... any thoughts?
I don't know. I move now to the bridge and maybe I move from here, Santa Cruz, because Santa Cruz, the rent is the problem.
I remember you told me before.
Yeah, the rent, you know, but they protection the rich people, you know, the people rent rooms, the people have building houses, but not for the poor people. I receive $1,200 a monthly is what the room...
And you can't afford it anyway.
You know, yeah. One room costs maybe more than that one, you know.
And again, we've been talking with...
Excuse me?
Miguel, you are... What's your name? Say it again.
Miguel Portillo. I am from Guatemala.
I remember. Thank you, Miguel.
Okay, thank you. Okay.
So Officer Carr is telling someone in a tent he has to move. And I'm not sure what the guy in the tent is saying. Thank you, Miguel. Thank you for talking to me on a bad day, right? So the police are not threatening arrest yet, but they are terrorizing people into moving with in the most courteous possible manner, of course. Camper, our resident here, comes up saying that... He tried to get a shelter, but was told last week you didn't have any place, right?
Yeah.
That tall guy, Jeremy?
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you, man. There is a sort of a small section of the campground now that has been taped off with yellow do not cross tape, and it is being bulldozed by the famous, we don't give a shit about your property. We aren't going to tag it or bag it. We're just going to destroy it and throw it into a dumpster. And there are plenty of dumpsters waiting to be hauled over. Mostly standing by, chatting with each other, three officers and... Carter Jones, as the bulldozer does its crunching nearby. I guess we should be glad they're sparing the
the folks, a couple of sheriffs, deputies, are, who knows, maybe they're helping out. Thank you. Thank you. So a sheriff is actually helping a guy reclaim his bike, which is good, but, you know, they're also helping destroy a lot of property, so I'm afraid it does not come out even. There is going back with its loot across the desolated 4 or 7 zone, the previous zone that was removed a week ago, and to the bins of the dumpster bins that are waiting over there, and going to dump his load into the dumpster. We have an
unworthy.
It looks
I'm
like
in some stage of fucking moving this.
Okay. And there were very few activists there. Myself, Sea Otter, Laura, Gloria. A Sentinel photographer showed up briefly, and then I found him as I left the area, standing on the path, saying he was waiting for Jessica York. York did a long interview. Well, that's not really true. She devoted, 4 or 5 paragraphs to Bill Lowry, who spoke at length on either my last show or the show before this one, that one. There just wasn't much of the community wanted to come out in this continuous drizzle that was going on and watch this grim scene. And I admit I was less vocal than in the past. I wasn't shouting, "Stop your crazy seizure of property, that's against the law," and so forth, which I did on at least one occasion in an earlier demolition when there were more folks there to hear. There was just endless and hefty panic. This was the last area. People could no longer move into another safe zone as the city had allowed, and with the demolition of each successive phase, counting on the fact that would stop resistance, and maybe there wouldn't have resisted anyway, because I'm not aware that anyone resisted. Well, I think I may have heard one person or very few people resisting. You're going to hear later in this an interview with Keith McHenry, who talks about the issue somewhat, but he wasn't there either. Busy cooking, I would imagine. Anyway, let's hear a little Phil Oakes and try to mellow out.
When the river of rebellion overflows, I'll be there. When the seed of discontent plants and grows, I'll be there. Watching for the sun through the dark and rainy storm. Searching for the keys to the dungeons old and worn. Let me tell you, I'll be there. When the shadow of the tyrant falls and sweeps across the land. And when men would steal from others with a paper in their hand. When people toil for nothing underneath the burning sun. When their troubles would be over if they thought and fought as one. Let me tell you, I'll be there. East or west or north or south, we're brothers to the core. The wind of freedom's blowing out of every distant shore. When the time is ready and the call is loud and clear, let me tell you, I'll be there. When the thunder of oppression roars and crackles, I'll be there. And when those who would be free are wearing shackles, I'll be there. For the day is gonna come when they'll throw away their chains, lift their heads and raise their arms for the struggle that remains. And let me tell you, I'll be there. East or west or north or south, we're brothers to the core. The wind of freedom's blowing out of every distant shore. When the time is ready and the call is loud and clear, let me tell you, I'll be there. When the thunder of oppression roars and crackles, I'll be there. And when those who would be free are wearing shackles, I'll be there. For the day is gonna come when they'll throw away their chains, lift their heads and raise their arms for the struggle that remains. Let me tell you, let me tell you, let me tell you, I'll be there.
Okay, well, this is an interview I just apparently getting this turned into with Keith McHenry about 110 on the 1st of November. Hi, Keith.
Hi, yeah, it's eviction day. And, yeah, I saw several new stores downtown boarded up now with new for rent signs, so apparently that's happening. Then I did the Halloween thing. I did a really bum's table for the Halloween people on Pacific Ave, and it was really interesting. So there was a couple of people, you know, every once in a while a good-hearted person would come by and ask about the shelters, you know.
Uh-huh.
And there would be an unhoused person near me,
uh-huh.
And they would just, it was like an immediate reaction, and it was like five different people, five different times, both five different housed people versus five different unhoused people, and the people living outside would just like go, oh my God, they're horrible, I'm never going back there. You know, they would just blow it out in this intense anger.
Wow, I should let you borrow my recorder so you can record this stuff, because it's I think it's useful for any future lawsuits or something like that.
Yeah, it was really interesting how pissed off people were, man.
How long were you at the Pacific Avenue table on the Halloween
scene? About 5 hours or something like that.
And that was from when to when?
Oh, I went there around 2 and I stayed there till 7, actually, so however long that is.
Did the Halloween crowds come rolling out?
It was mostly the families and, and stuff. And then it got cold, and I was, like, left. But the interesting thing is I put up a "We'll Be Mayor for Food" sign,
mm-hmm.
and, my posters on Good Times box next to the kiosk in front of New Leaf. And Sonia Bonner saw it, and I was talking to an abolitionist activist, prison abolitionist activist in Boston on the phone at the time, and I see her trying to pull my poster off, and I go, "You don't touch that. That's my poster. And I didn't give you permission to touch it."
Nice.
And I'm looking at the mayor, and I'm like, going like, "Look, you're a violent thug, and I want you to get out of here."
All right. And what did she do?
No, she's like kind of shuddering. So then, these two, Bush and one of the other cops, come up.
Before you continue, did she back off, or did she?
Well, she stopped pulling it off. Yeah, I confronted her like that, and I'm still the whole time the woman over in Boston still listening to this whole conversation. And then, I go back to my conversation. And again, Bush and the other cop kind of were hanging around, talking to her. And then, she was claiming that the box was hers, that the Good Times box was hers. I just went on with my business once she stopped taking it down and the cops arrived. And, Bush asked me, like, "Do you got permission to be in there?" I said, "Well, I know Steve. I'm sure he doesn't mind." And then they left it there. And then it was too funny just to have all these people watching me, like, tell the mayor to go away.
Did the people know it was the mayor, do you think?
Yeah, I don't know. Well, some people did. Not everyone did. But I think it's great, just to show total disrespect for these people.
Well, it was a vandal tearing down your flyer, whether it was the mayor. In fact, even more important, because the mayor is expected, if I may be so bold as to say so, to set an example.
Yeah, right.
Actually, you should have commended her and said, "Good, you should tear down all those political flyers."
Yeah, right. Yeah, it's too funny. And so I put up more in response, of course, all over wherever. Oh, that's so funny.
So you also mentioned, Keith,
that Adams wanted to interview me about fiscal sponsorship and stuff on the video. I'm like, okay, well.
Who interviewed you?
Brent Adams with a cell phone,
He interviewed you, you say?
Yeah, not in a friendly way. But
What was the reason he was calling?
He wasn't calling. He just was walking by and started taking a videotape, because he was confused about that we're not a charity, but then we have a fiscal sponsor, but he didn't really seem to get that those are two different things.
It's been his impression, and he has stated on my show that you are funneling all money into a personal account when you claim it's going to a nonprofit. And you, I think, you made a response to that. Remind me of what your response to that was.
Yeah, no, it doesn't, you know, the only money that goes in my, so basically I take money out of my personal account and put it into the Food Not Bombs account and have done so for years. And so I just put $5,000 of my money I'd saved from, you know, Social Security into the Food Not Bombs account so I could pay the rent on the kitchen. So it's actually the opposite direction. And I only, in years, I've only kept of the money I make. Personally, I only keep $1,000 a month, and the rest I donate to Food Not Bombs. So it's actually completely the opposite way, and there was an independent Food Not Bombs bank account, which has existed since the arrest of Haight-Ashbury in 1988.
Who controls that account?
It's me and Paul and Joel, all the people that are currently controlling it.
Huh.
Before that, it was when I lived in Taos, New Mexico, with David, and me and Hank that controlled it.
And how is that a sizable account or a relatively small account?
It's got like it might have $1,000 in it right now.
Yeah. So it's not a multi-million-dollar or multi-thousand-dollar account.
No, it's typically barely enough to pay the bills. Yeah, well, and then we send money to we will do campaigns to raise money. So, like, we raised a bunch of money for Food Not Bombs kids in Poland right at the beginning of the war because a huge number of people were flooding into Poland. Or the most recent thing, which I just told Grant Adams, is that we sent a bunch of money to Philippines to help them with the cyclone that just happened. So,
what was Brent's response to these? First of all, how long was your Brent Adams interview?
Oh, I don't know, about, like, 5 minutes or something, but it was definitely accusatory. It certainly would not be wise to publish that if you want to have any credibility as Brent Adams.
I'll ask him about it, and when I next interview him, if he, you know,
I could have come back because I have to admit that I've been hanging out with Max a lot recently, and Max eats at Food Not Bombs every day. Max lives outside still.
You're talking about Max, the man who was assaulted and then airlifted to emergency medical treatment?
Exactly, and that he raised something like $15,000 for? And maybe $20,000? The last I looked, it was about $15,000 on Brent Adams' GoFundMe for Max.
Did that get to Max's medical expenses?
Max's medical expenses are covered by the fact that he's, covered. I would have assumed that the money would have gone to making sure he got into a hotel and had a good meal.
Did you query Brent about that issue and ask him where Max...
No, but when I've talked to Max about it, he didn't know that this was even happening, that there was even a GoFundMe for him or anything about it, and no one has ever given him any money. I'm assuming that Brent will give him money at some point.
I'll ask Brent about it if I remember.
I'm hoping he did. Or maybe Max got money and Max doesn't know that he has money, and Max for some reason is still living outside, and for some reason Max is still coming to Food Not Bombs every day and hanging out with us and eating with us. Which maybe if you were in an apartment, maybe he does have a hotel room, but he doesn't look like he has a hotel room because he certainly didn't wash his hands or his face or anything. So I don't know what's going on with that. But, so it's like this weird thing where, he's accusing me of something, but, he publicly made a crap load of money for Max. And then
you're wondering where it went.
Yeah, Max doesn't seem to be accessing it yet, but maybe there's some problem with getting the money from GoFundMe to Brent's bank account to give to Max, or I don't know, but it's just, I think it's a funny thing, because anybody that knows me on the streets know I'm buying like hundreds of dollars worth of pup tents. Obviously, we're paying for kitchens, we're obviously paying for gas, it's all done publicly at Food Not Bombs meetings, it couldn't be somewhere, like, obvious what the fuck's going on. It's really crazy. In fact, right now, I'm going to get money out of my own personal account to pay for the gas for Eagle, you know. So it's just the nature of life, you know. I skim right along.
Well, how is Food Not Bombs dealing with the rain? How's that working today?
It's been tough, but it happens, you know. We have our three awnings. Everybody's kind of, in a way, the fact that they covered up the water in the fountain has been good, because a bunch of people were sitting up there. And it's a lot of people there just now. I just was there. And it's pretty impressive that many people came out in this driving of a rain to eat, you know. So that's crazy.
Well, remember that this is the day that everybody was driven away from the last segment of the Benchlands, which you were mentioning earlier, you know.
Yeah, I was talking to Kazoo about that last night, and he was, like, pretty frustrated with that, but, you know, he's good-natured and happy and all that. But, you know, he and I were having an interesting conversation. We were talking about, like, because Jeremy says that there's all these, Jeremy Leonard, who worked for the city, was saying there's all these, like, you know, Mexican gangs in there running the whole camp, blah, 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 blah. So... And that came up in the conversation with Kazoo, because he was talking about this guy that was selling something, but he didn't really say what it was, you know, in his end of the camp, and how he had been living in the camp, but he made enough money to buy a motorcycle and move out of the camp, or something like that, you know. It was like, like, basically, if you got, you know, booted out of prison or something, then you've got to make a living, and that's sadly frequently the way you make a living. And but anyway, it was an interesting conversation, because he mentioned that during the last year, you can't find heroin anymore. That everybody's just buying
fentanyl.
Fentanyl. So then I'm thinking, what an interesting coincidence, because I remember when 9/11 happened and they announced that they were going to invade Afghanistan. I was like, you know, I thought the crack cocaine thing is going to die out. We're all going to move into the heroin thing. And then, of course, it did. It went heroin, heroin, heroin. And then, oddly enough, you know, because the crack cocaine thing was all because we were fighting wars in Nicaragua, El Salvador, and all that. And you know, using the transport of their military planes to bring it up here. And sure enough, it switched off. Crack was no longer an issue, and then it became heroin. Well, as soon as the U.S. is kicked out of Afghanistan, it's to fentanyl. It's really interesting how, you know, maybe it's just a coincidence that all the heroin just stopped coming over from Afghanistan at the same time the U.S., you know, got kicked out of the country. But it seems suspicious. You know, very interesting.
Now, you also mentioned originally when you called me right before we began this conversation on record that you drove by River Street and saw across the river the consequences of the rain and what looked to you like flooding of the entire lower but now depopulated section of the campground. Is that accurate?
Yeah, it's like right behind the county building. I was driving along Water Street, actually. And you could see a puddle that was looked quite deep, that went all the way from the like the bike path part that goes under the bridge on the Water Street Bridge, about way up that end of the park,
and that's even before the fenced area then, or was that all the fenced area that you saw that was flooded?
Yeah, it's where, like, it was that end of the Benchlands, like, so it's the area that flooded when we were doing Food Not Bombs at the, you know, they kicked us down there on the, from the, at the beginning of COVID.
Yeah, it was behind fences, in other words. It was one of the first phases, phase one or two, that was cleared out and fenced.
Yeah, so it's actually, it's the one and two are flooded completely at this point.
I mean, it's interesting because I know in the actual December, January, whenever it was flood of earlier this year or earlier, late last year, it was the other end that was really flooded, that people were, actually concerned that they might actually be trapped there. And I guess I was, that's what I thought you originally meant. But
yeah, well, that might be also. I mean, I wasn't down at that end, so I don't know. Uh-huh. I just happened to be going by.
That was, of course, that was the end that was, you know, depopulated today.
Correct.
In the last of the, you know, of the demolitions. Have you, I guess when you were at the table, that was yesterday, so the camp was still in existence, part of it anyway, while you were there.
Yeah, Kazoo was in that part of the camp, and that's why we were, one of the things why we were talking with each other about that, what they were anticipating this morning.
You haven't seen Troy, have you?
Oh, I haven't seen him in a little while. I saw him riding a bike past me on Pacific, like, couple of days ago, but I haven't seen him since.
Okay, that's I was just wondering, because he's, we're trying to, he was helping a group of us get together people's names and contacts for either a lawsuit or for some kind of future connection, continuity, so that we can get maybe some warning that there's another camp gathering and they're going to start sweeping, and then, you know, Robbie Powell.
Yeah, well, there are a couple of camps that haven't started sweeping yet, but I anticipate, if they, what they're saying in the media is true, that they will sweep them soon.
Yeah.
And I would not be surprised if the rain keeps going and gets really, really heavy for a while, then some of those camps are going to be washed away. And those people are going to have to move up to higher ground. But
of course, Poganip is now, you know, more and more camps are appearing that are visible from the road as you drive into town.
You can see them on the sides, yeah. And, yeah, it's crazy. And,
any events coming up with either Food Not Bombs or Food Not Bombs sponsored, although I don't know how much sponsoring Food Not Bombs is doing because you're kind of occupied with the daily meal, which goes on and on. Any news of that, or also any news of other meals opening up that might be of help to people who are, you know, outside and looking, they can no longer cook their own food easily, particularly in the rain.
Yeah, this is like a mess. But no, I don't think St. Francis has started doing indoor foods yet. But I'm not. So every once in a while I hear rumor they might do it shortly, but it doesn't seem like they have yet.
Red Church and, meal is no longer happening anymore. There's no Monday thing anymore.
No, that's not happening. And yeah, and then the street team people moved over to the Resource Center for Nonviolence to have their meetings. But so they did that.
What's your take on the street people's team? Have you got any sense of how well that's either helping or hurting unaffiliated homeless folks on the street?
I mean, I think that there's the biggest thing about that is camaraderie of the people, but otherwise, and they still get their, like, coupons for McDonald's and stuff like that, but, I mean, and the main person I ever talked to is both Blue and Russell, they are involved, so I think there's some kind of, like, stability that's offered to that, but not the housing and everything that they put
in. And you're talking about the people who are working with the streets team. I guess what I was asking is, not based so much on what's the impact of the streets team on other homeless people, or does it have any impact?
I think, people that are not working with them have no interaction with them, other than just as, you know, the regular people that live outside have interaction with them, but it's no way related to being in the street team.
What's happened to the, if you learn, you probably haven't. We were, I guess, one person was mentioning to me that what with the demolition of the last of the benchlands, the porta-potties are going to disappear completely. And that's without being...
They've already disappeared, haven't they? I didn't see any...
Well, they were put up on the path, at least for Phase 7, the previous phase last week, they were still there. But I don't know, you may have noticed that they were gone. I didn't notice today. When I was down there myself when the benchlands was being closed, let me ask, Gloria, did you notice if the porta-potties were still there when you were...
They were the middle part, remember, before the bridge.
Right, they were still there. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm wondering if the porta-potties, which had been moved onto the upper path, midway through the demolition of the phases, are going to be gone completely, which means porta-potties, I mean, these people have not disappeared, Brent Adams claims to the contrary, probably notwithstanding, unless he's accurate, which I suppose he might be. He thinks that a third of those people are, you know, people who have moved in as part of the drug trade and who've just lived there and as a sort of a, because they can sell drugs to folks in the camp, and that therefore that they're going to disappear when the camp disappears, that they have other, actually they have housed places to go to. What's your take on that analysis? And we'll catch his take on the issue of drug population in the former benchlands in a moment. Here's a little more Phil Oakes.
Here's a song in A minor up 5 in K-Ball. It's called Paul Crump. It tells the story of a man who killed another man in Chicago in 1953. And while he was sitting in jail, he began appealing his sentence and winning. And began educating himself, wrote a novel called Burn, Killer, Burn. And just last year, his sentence was commuted by the governor of Illinois. Now he's still sitting, he's still in jail there now, and this case will be used a lot in arguments about rehabilitation versus capital punishment. In the state of Illinois, about 9 years ago, a cold-blooded killer, he went against the law. He killed a factory guard when his robbery did fail, and they caught him and they threw him into jail. He lay there in his cell, locked up with his hate. Not many men knew of him and less cared for his fate. And he knew no peace of mind when his trial did come by. The judge said, "You are guilty, you must die." But Paul Crump is alive today. He's a-sittin' in a cell. He's got something to say. Every human's got something to give. And if a man can change, then a man should live. They sent him to Cook County Jail, a jail known far and wide, where pity was a stranger and brave men often cried. He led a prison riot in the year of 55, and he didn't even care if he survived. But the jail had a new warden, Jack Johnson was his name. To cure instead of punish, it was his chosen aim. The riot soon was ended, the convicts feared in vain. The warden gave them hope instead of pain. But Paul Crump is alive today. He's a-sittin' in a cell. He's got something to say. Every human's got something to give. And if a man can change, then a man should live. Between the warden and the convict, a friendship slowly grew. One learned from the other that a man can live anew. Then the warden told the convict, "You must leave the devil's plan. The time has come for you to be a man." Then the convict found religion and he started in to learn. He wrote himself a novel called Burn, Killer, Burn. And as his dying day grew near, to the warden he did cry, "You must pull the switch if I must die." But Paul Crump is alive today. He's a-sittin' in a cell. He's got something to say. Every human's got something to give. And if a man can change, then a man should live. It was up to Governor Kerner to keep him from the grave. Was rehabilitation a reason to be saved? The people were protesting, the word was spread around, a new and better answer must be found. Well, the electric chair was cheated, the convict didn't pay. A new concept of justice was born and raised that day. Now throughout this peaceful land, there are others set to die. What better time than now to question why? 'Cause Paul Crump is alive today. He's a-sittin' in a cell. He's got something to say. Every human's got something to give. And if a man can change, then a man should live.
Oh, I wouldn't say. I mean, there's, you know, maybe of the people living down there, yeah, I don't know if there, you would, there might be two or three people that actually live down there or have like spaces down there to sell. You know, I think they're, you know, as if I really live. coming in from somebody's house selling the drugs to other, you know, like having a middleman, basically. So they were like actually house dealers that then hired, so to speak, probably in exchange for, you know, cut of the actual, you know, commodity, to distribute in the camp. So I think, you know, I get the impression they were sort of like, that's basically the way it worked. It wasn't like that there were, and it wasn't like Mexican, I mean, there were definitely like, you know, what they call Little Tijuana down there. You know, there was people connected to the Spanish-speaking community that delivered to there, and then they distributed there, and then, I mean, you can see it openly when you're walking down there, you know, how the different communities are. Then there was an African-American community that was doing some kind of other operation partially, and they were busy doing what they were doing. And then, you know, so, but it seemed like the way the trafficking was from house people distributing to people that actually were legitimately living in the camp, and this is how they would, you know, finance their...
Well, I guess my point here is that that's interesting to hear your perspective, which sounds like it's different than Brent's, and definitely different than Jeremy's, who I think was very much afraid of, he expressed fears about being assaulted by drug lords and people.
Well, he's going to get assaulted by just anybody at all because everybody hated his fucking guts.
many people were hostile, some weren't, but many were. And I know he was not on the scene. A week ago, he was on the scene only an hour later after it had started, and then I guess, at least that's what I saw. I think I challenged him in that regard, but he and I have been, shall we say, developing more of a adversarial relationship recently. And then people were looking for him to get housing today, because I was down there at 9 o'clock when they started this demolition, well, 8:40 or something, and he wasn't there. So there was that problem, although he said one guy who I talked to briefly said that Jeremy had said that they were full up yesterday. And
yeah, I think you get the sense that generally they're full all the time since this clearing has happened. But then what ends up happening is people become so pissed off at what's going on, they leave and then new people come in. So I think it's basically for a couple of weeks now been essentially, other than maybe what they do, I guess they keep four tents available in the overlook, and they keep like a couple of tents available at 1220 River, and then I think they keep a couple of beds available so that they can say that there is a place for someone when they're harassing them on the streets. And then
are those numbers speculative, or do you have some basis for saying those numbers, 4 and 2?
What I recall from, you know, city council or city manager reports. But who knows if that stays real or anything? You know, that just seems to be
the point I was making.
Who even knows if that was real ever?
That's true. A report is a report, and the reality is something else. But I guess the porta potty thing that I mentioned, I guess my concern is, I don't think they're going to. I don't know. I'm wondering what's going to happen when those porta potties are gone, because I don't think the hundreds of people who lived in the benchlands are gone. You know, that's what I'm, and so that means there are no facilities and much more people without even a pot to shit in, and which of course you might say is nothing new, but because of the increased homeless population, it's going to be even more of a burden on the poor dog walkers who are going to, you know, have to deal with doggies dealing with homeless people on the streets. I mean,
yeah. Well, the thing that's very strange is, of course, by you know, they had 2 years to actually figure out some kind of places for people to safely go. They didn't really do anything. You know, they just emptied the places they already had and then put people back in the places they already had. I guess the only, you know, they, and it was very fascinating. It seemed like the so-called leadership of down in the benchlands, like people like Greg, got offered tiny homes over at Housing Matters. So to keep them quiet, I guess. And that's typical. That kind of reminds me of that guy in, you know, that ended up handing out Camp Agnos to t-shirts in 89. That's the dude's name. But he was like, they lent him an apartment and a Suzuki car or something.
This is up in
San Francisco. He became the official spokesperson for all the homeless in the camp, and he would spin it the way the government wanted it.
This was up in
This
was up in San Francisco at the Civic
yeah.
Center, and when there was a camp that the Examiner called Camp Agnos, it was and Food Not Bomb set up an operation where you fed 24 hours a day. Well, how come you can't feed 24 hours a day anymore, Keith?
Because I turned 65 and I'm old. So, God, it's amazing we've been out. We'll be out there, like, on the, I guess, the 10th of December. We'll be doing meals every day for 1,000 days. So that's not too,
No, it's not too shabby.
No. So, God, we're hoping St. Francis opens up because maybe we could change our operation. But at the rate things are going, the amount of I did 11 5-gallon trays of food on Sunday by myself. Essentially, I did have some help from Blue. He made the rice and he boiled the pinto beans. But
how does that compare with a year ago?
Oh, a year ago was like. You know, even like within the past year, it's gone from the most we usually did 7 5-gallon trays, and now we're doing, you know, 10 for sure every day. So, and sometimes we run out often really fast. And on the days where we don't make 10, you know, basically if we get there at 1 o'clock, it can be gone by 2. So it's growing and growing. And then the paper products, you know, is another measurement of how much food is going. The you know, because we're going through paper products like crazy. And yesterday was really cool, though. The concert was great, man. That was incredible.
And what concert was that?
Every holiday we do a free concert at the Mio, and the next one is Veterans Day on the 11th. Of November, 11 days from now.
And this was the Halloween concert you're talking about?
Yeah, this was the Halloween concert.
Was there a lot of costumes and face painting and such?
Yeah, there was all that, and the band is really top-notch now. So I think we've figured out that. So Jay was one of the guitarists, and it was good. God, it was great. So that's happening, and... I ran into a person stopped by the table on Civic to tell me he was wearing all kinds of wacky clothes because he had gone to Coral Street to take a shower, came back, and his RV was towed, and he lost everything.
Oh, boy.
Get it back. So that's pretty common.
Where was his RV parked, you know?
It was on Delaware. It looks like they're going to take all the vehicles on Delaware. Everybody was tagged on Delaware.
And there's no Nomad or other groups that are defending them anymore?
Not that I'm aware of. I think, you know, what ended up kind of happening is all those particular people are, you know, they're doing the electropolitics stuff, you know, not particularly the most negative things, but, you know, like, you know, trying to get the empty houses law passed and trying to stop the, you know, the library project and getting, I guess, couple of city councilors elected or something, or a mayor, or whatever.
Joy Schindeldecker campaign versus your friend Fred Keeley.
Yeah. I ran into Fred yesterday walking up and down with his wife on Pacific Ave. That was interesting.
Did he give you a hug, perhaps? Did he give you a hug?
I reminded him that I had already won the election and I was the mayor because I was actually feeding people and actually providing water, clothing, and housing. And those are kinds of things that mayors do.
Really? I've never known a mayor who did such a thing.
No mayor ever does do those kind of things. But if a mayor was going to be a mayor that actually did something for the community, those would be things mayors would do. Rather than what they normally do, which is
nothing.
Get lots of money from you and give it to their rich friends. That's a typical mayor thing.
You're not accusing Mayor Bruner of corruption, are you?
No, she isn't even up to the level of corruption, unfortunately. Yeah,
So did the other candidate, Joy Schindeldecker, pass by your table?
No, she did not, no. Huh. And I actually called Chris Crone to get flyers for, you know, yes on O and stuff, but nobody came by. So people were, you know, asking about it. So, yeah, it's funny.
Interesting, interesting.
It's a funny world out there. And no one was dressed in underwear with a hammer, which I would have thought there'd be tons of people like that, but nobody did that.
Underwear with a hammer. What would that signify?
Oh, that would be the, you know, just building on the Pelosi jokes, you know.
I know that her husband was assaulted, and that the guy wanted to hammer Pelosi. Is that the idea?
The initial reports from actual, you know, from the police department and from the 911 calls and stuff like that was that there were some people having sex in Pelosi's house, and it went bad. And, and they got ended up in a fight over drugs is what the initial story was. Of course, that's been spun to something different to help the...
Where did you hear this from?
That was just a normal. I just watched online the chief of police give the first press conference, and I listened to the 911 tape, and read the affidavit. So that's what it looks like. It happened, yeah. And saw the photos.
Are you claiming that those who are warning about a conspiracy against dear Nancy Pelosi and her husband are in fact spinning something in, should we say, a false direction?
Oh, that the Pelosi and the Democrats are, yeah, for sure. They're trying to bail their ass out of that. But it was pretty obvious. Well, I mean, who breaks into a house in his underwear with two hammers? And then, the official story is that the cops walked in, there was Paul and David. They were, Paul had a hammer, David the hammer from Paul in front of the cop, according to the police report, and then there was actually nothing happened after that. Although somehow both individuals ended up in the hospital, and both are currently in the hospital.
Now, so, Paul is Pelosi's husband, and David is the alleged aggressor, right?
Yeah, right. And David is now there's calling him homeless, but at the time he was, if you want to call him homeless, he was living apparently in a bus in Berkeley, and the photos of his house show that he had Black Lives, or the place where his bus was parked had Black Lives Matter posters all over it, and the gay flag, and it was a prominent thing in the front, and, you know, so, but, I mean, at the very first moments of the story were, according to the San Francisco Police Department, was that the officer was let into the place by somebody. They went in further, and there was Paul Pelosi and this other guy, David DePapa, and David DePapa was trying to wrestle a hammer out of Paul Pelosi's hands, and then that's where it kind of stopped. So you don't, and then some reason he's got both of them are injured, and the timeline originally of how Paul Pelosi got a fractured skull was not evident in the original press conference by the chief of police. It was basically, and the narrative ends with David DePapa pulling the hammer out of Paul's hand. So that's just what was happening. You know, I'm just like reporting what the original report.
And is that report still online?
Oh yeah, I'm sure you could go look at Google all the press statements, and theoretically it'll be there. Then it somehow gets spun a different way, but and it's not clear. And then also, if you watch the district attorney's press conference of yesterday, just makes you wonder what's going on, because the complaint has multiple stories that all contradict each other, so you can read that online too, or at least it was online yesterday. I don't know if it's still online now. But yeah, so it's like very confused as to what's going on. Hmm. So it looks like the claim that he definitely is not a MAGA anybody, and he's definitely not a QAnon anybody, this guy David. He's just appears to be just he's like a hangs out at this house in his bus, and they're into having new parties and stuff like that, and that's what the, at least the initial statements are. The current, and then you can see that it's very unusual. It seems very weird that a guy in his underwear would have climbed up the wall and climbed over the balcony into the where the broken glass that keeps showing videos of, and break the glass, which for some reason when they broke the glass, it mostly went outside on the patio. According to the videos that the AP and everybody is showing.
Well, I'm going to leave this sordid tale here.
The weird thing, it's very funny if nothing else. I think it's one of the funniest things, and who knows how this is going to get, definitely they seem to be spinning it to bolster their, January 6th event thing that they put on, and then to try to gin up some kind of, this is sort of like the Oklahoma bombing version of the new crime bill thing that they're trying to put in. This new domestic extremist bill, which basically is going after anybody that's critical of the government in any way or corporate power.
Any word of a successful legal action defending homeless encampments throughout the state? I know that there was lawsuits filed in San Francisco, but it hasn't really gotten very far yet. And of course, I guess Robbie Powelson is assisted in lawsuits in the North Bay, but I'm not sure how successful they are currently in their current status. And I think Chico got a settlement finally. I talked to one of the ACLU guys who reported on that to me unofficially, of course. But anyway.
I don't have any information on homeless sweeps. I do know that there was a recent report that the appellate court upheld a conviction for a law, making it illegal to hand out food in St. Louis.
Right, I read that.
Area. And then in Arizona, I guess she just lost her case. But I only just heard that from Joe Schultz from India Joe just about 20 minutes ago, or just before we got on the phone. So I haven't followed up to see where that's at. But I've been, she was really cool in the interviews I've seen of her. Norma, and I forget her last name. But she'd been cooking with some other people that ran a soup kitchen, and then she just was so upset about what was going on, she started feeding people at the picnic area. And then she, at some point, I guess she had already had like an event there without a permit, but it was not homeless people officially. Or at least the authorities assumed it was just their friends, so you don't need a permit to have a picnic there. But when it became homeless people, then you did need a permit or you couldn't even get a permit. You just plain weren't allowed to feed people there. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting how that kind of thing goes on.
Sounds
so
familiar.
We're hoping that doesn't become normalized, where start to arrest people for feeding people like they did in the past. But it could be. Well, our meeting is about to start here for Brave and Free, so I better sign off.
Now, just a moment. What is this meeting before you sign off?
Oh, it's a meeting to defend our rights. We have an organization called Brave and Free to push back on all the totalitarian laws.
Is this here in Santa Cruz, or?
Yeah, it's for Santa Cruz County, Brave and Free. Yeah.
And how can people get more information about this?
If they go to RavenFreeSantaCruz.org, and that's the website that we're actually still working on. But or they could, and then we meet the second and fourth Tuesday, Tuesdays of the month at Aptos Grange at about 6 o'clock.
Sounds good, and I will I'll pass that on, and thanks for taking the time again, Keith, as ever.
Great. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye, man. Bye-bye. So that's it for the Local Snapshots commentary and interview. Signing off before I become completely hoarse. I'm going to play you the audio of the video of Aaron Mate's On Contact interview with a professor, Richard Sakwa, I think his name is, on the Ukraine situation. The two of them explain it much better than I. And I'm going to leave that as a kind of my parting shot after a little bit of, well, concluding Phil Oak.
It's a story of William Worthy. William Worthy is a reporter for the Baltimore Afro-American and the Realist in New York. And he went down to Cuba a while ago. When he got back, he was arrested. He came back to Florida. He was arrested for illegal reentry to the United States because it's against the law for Americans to go to Cuba or China or several other places. So he's running around the country appealing and making speeches and getting all kinds of support. So here's the ballad of William Worthy. Well, it's of a bold reporter, a story I will tell. He went down to the Cuban land, the nearest place to hell. He'd been there many times before, but now the law does say the only way to Cuba is with the CIA. William Worthy isn't worthy to enter our door. Went down to Cuba, he's not American anymore. But somehow it is strange to hear the State Department say, you are living in the free world you must stay. $5,000 or a 5-year sentence may well be for a man who had the nerve to think that traveling is free. He should have listened closer when he heard the experts say this modern world is getting so much smaller every day. William Worthy isn't worthy to enter our door. Went down to Cuba, he's not American anymore. But somehow it is strange to hear the State Department say, you are living in the free world you must stay. So come all you good travelers and fellow travelers too, and travel all around the world, see every country through. I'd surely like to come along and see what may be new, but my passport's disappearing as I sing these words to you. Well, there really is no need to travel to these evil lands. And though the list grows larger, you must try to understand and try hard not to worry if someday you should hear that the whole world is off limits. Visit Disneyland this year. William Worthy isn't worthy to enter our door. Went down to Cuba, he's not American anymore. But somehow it is strange to hear the State Department say, you are living in the free world you must stay.